Welcome back to the Build Your First Microsoft BI Solution with SQL Server 2008 R2. In this presentation, Peter Myers is going to drill down into an architectural overview of all the individual components involved in a SQL Server Analysis Services database.
Thank you, Roger. So understanding the components of the Analysis Services database, we're going to introduce them and then we're going to talk about how we can enrich a cube. So we're going to start with the data source. It's the first thing you're going to develop in an analysis services project. We'll then talk about what this data source view is and then what it takes to develop cubes and dimensions. So your data source essentially stores a connection string to where your data is coming from, and supported are OLLIDB providers and managed .NET providers, and it will support these five popular databases. If you're looking for something beyond this, the product won't necessarily support it directly, so it's likely you would need to ensure your data is in one of these five. The next step is then producing a data source view. So this is a metadata definition of your schema elements. Note that it's not something that ever gets delivered to the clients directly. It's used internally, and I like to think of it as a virtual schema because it provides you as a developer the opportunity to focus on what's relevant and start to clean up what that schema looks like. Now, often as database developers, we like to use these geeky terminologies like dim this and fact that, which means something to us in the database world, but in the understanding here that you're producing a model that would be consumed by end users that are not usually IT proficient, we need to clean up the names of the tables and the columns to make them representative and user-friendly. So we can focus on these, we can clean them up. There is the ability to integrate multiple sources into one data source view, so I could have data coming from my Access database and part of the data coming from SQL Server, and then I could relate that in the one view. Appreciate that it requires only read access to the underlying definitions and data. So if you do need to start modifying, not just by renaming, but perhaps introducing calculations into the columns, or defining relationships between the tables, we can achieve this in this virtual schema. We can design disconnected from the data sources, so I guess if you're on that long flight, so long as you've captured the metadata and added the tables to the data source view, you can start to develop the dimensions and cubes. Of course, you won't be able to process them with the underlying data until you reconnect. And the other great news for a developer is it insulates you from object changes that should a column be renamed or dropped or added in the source system, it might be easier then to affect that change in the data source view level without disturbing your dimension and cube definitions. So appreciate that dimensions, cubes, and mining structures are all based directly off data source views. And then we come to producing the cube, which is a combination of measures and dimensions as one single model. And your measures come from your fact tables and, well, your dimensions come from your dimension tables. You can incorporate multiple fact tables into the one cube, and we refer to it as a measure group at this point. And this way, a single cube can represent multiple subject areas, and that way we can query across finance, sales, and HR at the same time, if that makes sense to do so.
And for the BI uninitiated, you know, measures and dimensions are fancy words that we use in the BI community to just describe something very, very specific, right?
Right.
Measures are just measurements of things like numbers, readings, dollar amounts, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Typically, we're dealing with a number or some kind of numeric
almost
value.
Always.
Yeah,
right.
And dimensions are essentially ways of analyzing those numbers. Right?
Yeah, they're the things.
Yeah,
right. The people, the places, the products.
Right.
And so on. So yes, I think it measures as numeric values that we want to analyze.
Right.
And the dimensions are what we want to analyze by.
Don't be scared by those terms. They're actually just very simple. Things that relate to data that we all work with on a daily basis.
Indeed. And when you think of a cube, it has dimensions, basically. That
right.
defines the space of the cube.
Right.
So this cube then can be enriched beyond the data that's going to be retrieved from your source systems. We can enhance it with calculations, key performance indicators, actions, perspectives, translations. Note that the latter two are Enterprise Edition only. We'll explore them later in this presentation. Now, you might think that the cube is where you spend most of your development effort, and the reality is it's really the dimension that delivers the richness of what the cube becomes. So it consists of a collection of attributes that correspond to the columns in your underlying dimension tables, like your product and so on. And we can produce attribute hierarchies that contain an all level and a one leaf level beneath it. So, for example, if I have a product dimension, I might have attributes that are category, subcategory, product, color, model, style. And for each of these, they will expose by default a hierarchy that have an all member at the top That allows me to query the cube without filtering on a particular color, for example. And then beneath it, we have a single level that contains the distinct values that it finds in the bound column. In other words, for a column hierarchy, we will have all and the distinct columns, colors. Mm-hmm. For the product category hierarchy, we will have all at the top and the distinct categories that we have within the table. And these then form the space of the cube, these hierarchies. Mm-hmm. Now, often, they don't support good navigation because they're very shallow. We have this all member and we have this level beneath it. So what we can do is assemble these attribute hierarchies to produce multi-level hierarchies. So the example I have here on the slide, here's an attribute hierarchy for fiscal year with the all member and our fiscal years. But often the requirement is that when I'm in a fiscal year, I see a summary and I go, well, show me at quarter level what that means, and at month level and day level. Mm-hmm. So we can assemble then the attribute hierarchies for fiscal year, quarter, and month to produce this type of hierarchy.
It's totally up to you, to the developer, as to how you define your hierarchies, how deep they go, whether or not they represent kind of standardized things that we deal with in our everyday computing, or whether they're very specific to your particular application environment, right?
Right, and they're usually easy to detect, because if you truly understand the requirements of those that will be querying the cube, they will make it quite clear. First of all, you're listening for that word by. Every time they say that I need to see sales, well, there's a measure. Mm-hmm. I need to see it by month. I need to see it by day sometimes. And then I need to break it down by category and by sales territory and so on. Every time that word buy comes in, it generally means a new dimension or a hierarchy that you need to introduce within that dimension.
And as the developer, you need to be thinking about enabling a really rich browsing experience by not just giving them some huge flat hierarchy with a million members at the leaf level, right?
Right. You want to think of convenience and efficiency, that we should be able to navigate down. If I gave you, for example, a date attribute hierarchy that had all, mm-hmm. and then 10 years worth of dates,
that would be painful
to navigate and inefficient for the application and the network to communicate that type of information. Preferable that I could go to the year, the quarter, the month, and then I'm going to find at most 31 members. And then I have to pick from it to find the date that I'm interested in.
Right.
All right, so we'll explore dimension types and characteristics here. Very, very important to a cube. Perhaps the most fundamental dimension is time itself, which I prefer to call date. Mm-hmm. The product calls it time. And that is because most analysis we do is in respect to time.
Right.
So a cube has a dimension that will give you the time or the date. Now, if the case is that you're building a cube off a data source that doesn't have a formalized date dimension, the product does support the creation of a date dimension by creating either the table for you or just pre-populating the members based off some templates that it has. Now, it's not the ideal way to do it, but in the appreciation that OLTP systems, they don't have date dimension tables, mm-hmm. this could fast-track the development of that.
Yeah, and that does tend to be something that hangs up people who are new. Mm. To cube development is this whole concept of a time dimension, so we give you a way to cheat, but eventually we'd like you to go out and do the hard work of creating that time dimension yourself.
Right, and to be fair, even if I build off an OLTP system, we had a presentation in this training course that talks about modeling and star schemas, and it really is, in my sense, my experience, a prerequisite that you have this star schema, a formalized fact and dimension tables. Now, if you're building off an OLTP system, a highly normalized structure, you're unlikely to have that schema there. So what I would typically do is create views that mimic a star schema, and then I would create and materialize a date dimension so that I truly do have the structure that best works for this product.
And that's where that data source view really helps out, because it helps you kind of remap those underlying data sources and turn them into a star schema where one didn't exist.
Yeah. well, you can do it at data source view level. I'd actually prefer if you could do it at the database level.
Gotcha.
And the reason for that is that views allow you to modify them without actually modifying the analysis services database itself.
Right.
And for example, a DBA could modify a view and add some hints if there were some performance problems at processing time.
Sure.
Some other characteristics, we have special dimensions beyond time itself for account and currency conversion, and other characteristics like parent-child hierarchies. Should you have these recursive relationships within the tables themselves, we can generate hierarchies from them, like organization charts, general ledger structures, and so on. And you can write-enable. It's an extremely unusual thing to do. In fact, I've never had to do it. Mm. You can have client applications write back to the dimension members in a hierarchy itself, enterprise edition only. All right, so to bring the cube together, conceptually it is your dimensions and your measures as one single model. The richness of the cube will be defined by the dimensions themselves. So when you develop the cube, it's just a matter of saying, what measures do I want, and what dimensions will interact with this cube? And the interaction between the dimensions and measure groups, which relate to your fact tables, is interesting, because there are five different ways we can relate, if there is indeed a relationship, because not all fact tables will share the same dimensionality. That's what's interesting. But if there is a relationship, it could be a regular or direct relationship. It could be referenced that one dimension references another dimension in turn to get to the facts. And this way you could use an unrelated dimension to analyze seemingly unrelated facts. You can build dimensions off fact tables themselves. In a sales situation, a common example would be sales order number. The sales order number is already in your fact table against the facts. We could build a dimension that allows us to slice on sales order numbers. Many-to-many scenarios support sophisticated modeling, where we've got, for example, a dimension of people and a dimension of bank accounts. And we want to say that people have multiple bank accounts and bank accounts have multiple people, and you can model that. And then finally, if you're going to get involved with data mining, in particular clustering, decision trees, association rules, those three mining models support taking the learned patterns that data mining has detected and then analyzing the data back in your cube. All right, we're going to explore enriching the cube with calculations, KPIs, and actions. Calculations are expressions that are evaluated at query time, and they're not actually retrieved from the source data itself. So they're basically expressions using multi-dimensional expression language that allows you to extend the definition of the cube through calculated members, name sets, and scoped assignments. And we're going to explore this in much more detail in the following module. Key performance indicators are also a form of calculation. They allow us to define these performance management objects that allow us to compare actual to target and to qualify this with status and trend. The great news about putting calculations in the cube is that we get consistency, whether we're using Excel pivot tables, reporting services, power pivot, performance point. We have consistency in the way that our calculations are actually evaluated. So here's an example of a KPI. Actual, goal, status, and trend provides much, much more richness of information than just telling us what they sold. We get to see target, status against that. The trend is comparing to a prior time period. So if it's a down arrow, it says it's getting the variation is worse than the prior time period. And then we come to cube actions. And this is where cubes really become interesting, particularly if you're familiar with relational databases where you simply have tables with columns and data. It's actually the application experience and you as a developer that have to make that meaningful and actionable, whereas a cube actually bakes in behaviors and definitions itself. So for example, we could have an action that says that when you double click in this client on an aggregate cell, show me details like the sales order number, the date, the product, and so on. So we can drill in to see the detail that back up the high level aggregate. Other URLs support opening reporting services reports and passing the context of where the action was launched into the parameters of the report server report. URLs to open up web pages and dynamically construct URLs that take you to somewhere meaningful from where you've launched. Most client applications, including Excel, Performance Point, will support these actions. And that brings us to the resources slide. So again, if you're new to cubes, I can't stress enough, the step-by-step is a great introduction to getting involved in designing and developing cubes. For the more advanced user, the Unleashed book takes you really into the depths and internals of what Analysis Services does, so I'm not going to recommend that as the first book. And expert cube development really conveys a lot of great experience from some professionals out there on how to design the best cube.
That's great. With that information, you should be ready to go out there and tackle your first cube. Thanks a lot,
Fantastic.
Peter.
Fantastic. Thank you.